WFAN 89.3 FM HD1 Dallas Fort Worth.
Welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I am here in the studio with Laron Landis, and Polka Alex is here with us, although you're not Polka Alex until the next hour.
Actually, on here, he's Alex the intern.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, Alex the intern.
He likes that. That's what I call him.
And our guests today, because it is Gay Super Bowl Day, our guests are blah, 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 whatever's in there. Why isn't the name coming out? Arnold Wayne Jones and Rich Lopez from the Dallas Voice. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We're going to talk Super Bowl today because that's what today is.
So should I be saying "Who Dat" a lot, or
I think we should be talking Cowboys versus Avatar.
There you go.
There you go.
Now, okay, what they changed the Oscars this year? They ruined it just like they ruined football and baseball by adding playoffs and wild card teams and all that kind of crap. Did the same thing this year with the Best Picture. We have 20 nominees tonight, and then they compete, and next week we're down to 10, and the week after it goes down to 5.
That is almost not anything like exactly the truth or the facts, David. So, but thank you anyway.
There are wild card teams, aren't there?
There are no playoffs.
So
there are no wild card
teams. Like the Eastern Division and the Central and the Western.
No.
And then the Joker is the wild card.
There might
and
be a gold medal in there somewhere, too.
Like in baseball when George Bush ran the Rangers, he was the Joker, so...
So, you have seen all 10 films.
No. I saw two.
Why are you moderating this?
So, forgive me if my questions are stupid. Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the Wind. Not nominated this year.
No.
I think it's best
I think picture. That even predates you.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
Even predates me. Alex? could you please walk around the table and slap him? Okay, we always talk when you're on, Arnold, we always talk supporting actor, supporting actress, best actor, best actress, best director, and best films. Rich, you will help me. You need to just put your hand over his mouth when it's and we will get you in. We will get you a word in edgewise.
Just remember, you do have to work with me tomorrow.
Well, we want to get through all of the nominations.
Right.
So we need to kind of get going. But let's start from kind of how they present. They start with best supporting, right?
No. Usually, yeah.
Usually.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let's start with best supporting actress.
Best supporting actress. The nominees are Monique for Precious, Maggie Gyllenhaal for Crazy Heart, Penelope Cruz for Nine, and two actresses from Up in the Air, Anna Kendrick, who plays the young intern kind of thing. It's Alex's role. And Vera Farmiga, who plays the slutty girlfriend of George Clooney.
My role.
The David Taffet role.
Yeah. So this is we kind of want to zip through this. Just quickly tell us who you think should win versus who will win.
I think who and will are the same thing. It's Monique for
okay.
Precious.
And Rich, who do you think?
I think the same. I think Monique really pulled it off and, you know, she's going to take it home.
Yeah,
okay, so
I totally agree.
Okay, tell us a little bit about
the
film.
Okay, moving on.
No, tell us a little bit about the film. And I know, you know, Best Picture and all that, but what is this role of hers that you think is so good?
Well, she plays, you know, the mom in Precious, and in Precious, which I actually didn't like that much. You know, she's just an abusive mother to the daughter and you know, everything that could be wrong with this person is. And, I mean, she's as evil as Darth Vader in this movie, and she's probably, you know, memorable for that same fact.
Actually, Darth Vader, you kind of feel sorry for at the end of Episode 6. You do not do that, really, with Monique in this movie. You understand why she's the world's worst parent, and you say, wow, I really understand you. Now I hope you die.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
There is a moment there with what Arnold is saying. You don't feel sorry for her, but you're kind of like, oh, okay, I kind of get you now.
Well, there's a difference between feeling sorry and empathizing and understanding the character.
Yeah.
Well, right.
Yeah.
And I don't think you're really meant to ever. I mean, she's humanized, but she's a humanized monster. She's not a humanized good person. You know, it doesn't apologize for anything. I've seen really good really good movies about Hitler. It doesn't make me say, you know, kind of had a point.
Exactly.
You know.
Okay, so if she doesn't win, why do you think somebody else will take it, and who do you think that might be?
I don't know that I can conceive of a situation where anyone else wins, honestly. I mean, I guess the closest I could come would be Maggie Gyllenhaal. This is the only nomination that she's gotten all season long, and she saves it for the Oscars. And the only possible reason would be that people are kind of sick of Monique. Monique has never gone up against Maggie directly.
And why do you think Maggie Gyllenhaal is in there? Why do you think she might deserve it? Why do you think?
I think that she stands out among the nominees because hers is probably the largest of the supporting roles. And I think that she's a popular actress, a young actress in Hollywood that people kind of admire. And she kind of holds her own against Jeff Bridges. It's a good performance. I mean, the movie itself, I think, is so much triteness rolled up in country music songs. It is basically a remake of, what's the name of the movie? Tender Mercies. I mean, it's basically a remake of Tender Mercies, which won, you know, Robert Duvall an Oscar 25 years ago. And I think that she's
and
just...
Made in Texas.
I think it's the exact same movie. I don't think there's anything fresh about it, but I think that to the extent that it connects with people, she would connect just as well as anything else.
Mm-hmm. And Rich, would you agree with that on the second?
I could agree, but I just think Monique is such a lock. I think she's almost unbeatable this year.
I think if she wins, you're going to see maybe some protests. I mean, if she loses, there's going to be some protests. That's how much of a lock I think she's in.
Who's protesting?
Who knows? NAACP might protest.
Equality Texas.
Yeah, there you go.
Queer Liber Action.
There you go. I think she's that much of a lock.
Yeah.
In.
Okay.
I think if she lost, that would be absolutely probably the biggest upset of the night.
Hmm. Okay. So for
best supporting actor, they are Matt Damon for Invictus, Woody Harrelson for The Messenger, Christopher Plummer for The Last Station, Stanley Tucci for The Lovely Bones. And
Christoph Waltz.
Thank you, Arnold.
For Inglourious Basterds.
For Inglourious Basterds.
And that's who you think?
That's who I think should win.
Okay.
But
Rich?
I think he should win. You know, I think it was just a shining, you know, piece of work in that movie. And he was, you know, both villainous and kind of charming. And, you know, how do you do that in one 2-hour segment?
Yeah, he's the Monique of Inglourious Basterds.
He really is.
He's really, really good, and I would not be upset at all to see him win. I really wouldn't. I think he was excellent. I mean, when I saw the movie last summer, I said, "Wow, he's just terrific." But I'm holding a room in my heart for Christopher Plummer to win. Christopher Plummer is 80 years old.
And what was he in?
For the movie The Last Station, which he plays Leo Tolstoy in his waning days. And this is actually Christopher Plummer's first nomination. He's 80 years old. He had another movie come out the same week, which is The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which he also kind of carried. He's, you know, everyone remembers him back from his own days in a German uniform in The Sound of Music.
And why wasn't he nominated for that one?
I don't know. I just don't think it resonated with people at the time the way it does. I mean, that's the funny thing about the Oscars. If you look back on the Oscars and, like, what won and what didn't win, there are lots of outrageous mistakes that have been made. I mean, the most famous, of course, being that, I mean, I could ask everybody here, not by your own personal opinion, but by general consensus, what's the greatest film of all time? Mm-hmm. David?
Casablanca.
Do you have any idea?
I couldn't give you one.
Gone with the Wind. Okay, that's interesting because it's the general consensus among like film critics and everything is
Citizen Kane.
Mm-hmm. It won one award. It lost to How Green Was My Valley.
Oh, that's what I should have named as best film. You're right.
So, and you look back now and you say, what?
My Valley was pretty green.
Was it pretty green? Yeah. I probably at the same time that Citizen Kane came out was the last time Your Valley was green. But it didn't. I mean, How Green Is My Valley just doesn't stand up the way as a classic the way it does. But you know, that's the thing about awards is they're not the greatest film of all time. They are snapshots of how people feel about the movies that they're seeing at that moment.
Well, but shouldn't the awards also be looking at that was really a best performance that 10 and 50 years from now people will go back to and see that in the year 2010 that's where the film industry was. And that was the best picture there.
Back in 1949, there was an actor appearing in a play on Broadway. He wasn't even nominated for a Tony because people just thought that if you're going to be on stage, you should speak loud enough and not mumble so that they could hear you in the back of the audience. And then he made the movie version of A Streetcar Named Desire. And it was, of course, Marlon Brando. And in 1949, mumbling was considered not acting. And now it's considered the standard by which actors get into their roles.
No, I don't think that's...
Well,
are you mumbling there, David?
Do you think there's any... we can do this per category, but in the supporting role for an actor, do you think there are any snubs? Because I do.
What do you think the snubs are? I haven't thought about it too much, but...
I was not in anything this year, Laurent.
Absolutely. Why did they look over David?
I wasn't in anything this
year. That's my first. My second is, I don't know, for some reason, I really liked Alfred Molina in An Education. Mm. And I don't know, I just thought maybe... I'm not saying he should have won, but I thought he probably deserved
it. I liked Anthony Mackie in...
that was my second.
In The Hurt Locker.
That was my second. Because I did not think... I'm really surprised... Well, there's two surprises I have in the Best Actor category, but one of them is Jeremy Renner. I don't know why he got nominated. And I thought, well, okay, if he got nominated, why did they ignore Anthony Mackie? It's just my opinion. Yeah. So I thought that was two snubs.
So you don't think the white guy deserved to be nominated, and you think...
No,
I'm kidding.
No. You're not kidding, actually. Because if you... No, it's not awkward. I can be honest. No, what I'm saying is, even if they were both white, if Jeremy Renner, who I didn't think should have been nominated, why didn't they nominate Anthony Mackie? He was just as good.
Because the number six nominee was Alfred Molina, who you listed before Anthony Mackie, and so there wasn't room for him on the list. I always think it's interesting. I mean, the thing about snubbing is fascinating to me because we were talking about supporting actress. I really thought it was going to be down to a race between Monique and Julianne Moore from A Single Man, and she's only on screen for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's really intense, a perfect performance. Just for what it served in the movie, the definition of a supporting performance. But she wasn't even nominated. And so it's like, oh, well, that makes my job a lot easier. Because
why do you think she wasn't nominated?
I don't know. I mean, who knows how these things work? You know, there's lots of complicated rules about how the nominations work to begin with. You know, assume that there are 100 members of the Academy. And they all have to put their nominations in descending order. They get to nominate 5 people in their categories. If 21 out of 100 put the same person in the number one position, that person's automatically nominated. Those all 100 could put the same person in the number 5 position, and that person might not get nominated because it's this complicated rule about the order in which they appear. So you can put the strongest nomination first, and it might be that a lot of people just put Monique first, and everybody kind of consensusly agreed that Julianne Moore was the 4th best performance, and so a lot of people put her in the 4th, but then enough people put Anna Kendrick and Vera Farmiga in a category above that they just kind of, it didn't work out for her. Hmm. I don't know how it works exactly that way. I think, you know, Anthony Mackie may have not been nominated by a single vote. Might have been because he wasn't a member of the Academy, and if he had been a member, he would have voted for himself. And, you know, who's to say? But that's why I say it's just a snapshot of these things, because I thought Jeremy Renner was terrific. You know, that scene with the boy who's been wired with the bombs is just, you know, he has no dialogue, and it's a very powerful moment when he realizes that this boy is dead and has now been turned into a bomb.
And Rich, do you have any other ideas for Best Supporting? for this year?
For, like...
Supporting actor.
Supporting actor who was not included on the list.
Yeah, I really liked Alfred Molina in his role, I think. You know, he added a lot to the movie. And then also, he's kind of been missed before. I thought they were going to say, oh, wow, you know, we've forgotten about this guy. Mm-hmm. So I really, really liked Molina's performance.
Now, the thing is, with the, oh, he's been missed before, should somebody get a nomination even, not even the award, should they get a nomination? Because if Christopher Plummer wins, people are going to say Christopher Plummer won it for The Sound of Music.
You know, they might. But I will say this. None of us have ever seen Christoph Waltz perform before. Mm-hmm. And so he's very impressive in this movie. But we might see him 5 years from now and say, oh, that was really, he's just kind of a one-note actor. You know, we never realized that he didn't. I mean, there are plenty of people. I can give you a whole list of people who've been nominated for one single Oscar, maybe even one, and have never been in the running since then. And it's because they kind of shot their wad on that one movie.
Yeah, I can give you one just off the top of my head, that Meryl Streep character.
She's actually won twice.
Right.
And about 16 nominations. So,
Well, it's just a tough comedy. I think ultimately, you know, like, we're all human. And so we think, oh, Alfred Molina did great in Frida and all that kind of stuff. So you start thinking back when you see how great.
Well, but is there anything wrong with that? Because what you're really giving them for is, I know this actor really is a fantastic actor.
I was a big fan. I was a big defender of the nomination and the win years ago when I was just a kid, really, for Don Ameche in Cocoon. Mm-hmm. Even though, because one of the things that was interesting about that movie is Don Ameche basically won that Oscar for a stunt double breakdancing for him. But the reason why he deserved to win is because when it stops being this breakdancer and it starts being Don Ameche again, he moves with such dignity. And that's a dignity that comes with an actor of Don Ameche's age and experience, bringing all that to bear at one moment. And you just luxuriate in that dignity in a way that if they had cast Zac Efron and put old man makeup on him, it would not have won the Oscar, because it just wouldn't have that gravitas, let's say. I mean, you need somebody like...
So like
Christopher,
us.
Yes, you, well, exactly. Well, you need someone like Christopher Plummer playing an 80-year-old writer.
Don Ameche, right? Yes, yeah. Us old people.
I'm actually not a fan of that. You know, awarding a performance for past performances. I get it, I understand it, but I'm not a fan of it. I think when I first started even to partially pay attention to the Academy Awards was when Whoopi Goldberg lost to Geraldine Page back in 85 or 86. And I realized that...
The same year as Don Ameche, by the way.
Is it? Okay. Geraldine Page had been nominated, what, 4 or 5 times before then?
Seven.
Okay. And had never won. And so a lot of people thought, okay, that's why she got the award. Not that her performance was bad.
Was that Trip to Bountiful?
Yes, exactly.
It was another Dallas-made movie.
Well, this is the whole point,
okay,
you know.
So wait.
But Laurent keeps saying people were saying or people will say. Well, if he doesn't say it, no one else says it. It's just a question of whether or not it deserves to win. I mean, you know, a lot of people object to Marissa Tomei's Oscar and think that she was, you know, not deserving of the win for that one. But you know what? The majority of people voted for her, and they thought that she was funny. And people always object, they never give Oscars to comedies. Then they give one for a comedy performance, and they say, oh, Jack Palance misread the card, and they didn't have the guts to take it back. You know, it's ridiculous. And so I think sometimes you just have to say, look, sometimes people just bring with them a little bit of baggage to the role.
Well, absolutely. And I actually wasn't finished with my point by a long shot, but I know we need to go to a break, so we'll wrap it up and then come back.
We have 1 minute.
Well, everybody's going to vote for some person based on different reasons. I just don't agree with that reason why to vote for somebody. I personally, if I'm going to ever have a shot to vote for somebody for an Academy Award, I would vote on who gave, in my opinion, that best performance.
But
that year.
But what are the rules about what the best performance is? That's the whole point.
That's arbitrary.
That sings the best in a musical, because a lot of people can't sing. So if this person sings and does it well, maybe that deserves an award more than someone who cries. On
whoever you. Stood out the best for you, in your opinion.
All right.
You're listening to Armed Weekly, and we'll be right back after this.
Maybe you don't want the hassle of selling it, or you've just hung on to it for too long. That's what the KNON Vehicle Donation Program is for. Call 877-KNON-AUTO or donate online at knon.org. The tow truck comes to your home and picks up the vehicle. They give you the paperwork that you'll need and relieve the stress of what to do with the old car that just won't sell. Your donation goes to support the great programming here on KNON. The number to call is 877-KNON-AUTO or online at knon.org.
You asked for it, so we're doing it. This is Blue Lisa, and I'm here to tell you that KNON is proud to present for the first time the KNON Fort Worth Blues Fest. That's right, we're taking our Blues Fest west to the Keys Lounge on Saturday, March 13th. Appearing at this event will be James Hinkle, the Silvertones featuring Joe Jonas, Buddy Whittington, JJ and the Detonators, and Blue Lisa's Big Texas Blues Review featuring Jackie Donlow, Miss Marcy, Tone Summer, and Andrea Dawson. Doors are at 6 p.m. and the show begins at 7. Advance tickets are $10 and available at knon.org, Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, and Record Town in Fort Worth. The Keys Lounge is located at 5677 West Creek Drive on the south side of Fort Worth. That's the KNON Fort Worth Blues Fest, Saturday, March 13th at the Keys Lounge.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis and intern Alex. Alex the intern is here in the studio with us. And our guests today are Arnold Wayne Jones and Rich Lopez from the Dallas Voice. We're talking about the Academy Awards, which happened tonight. So Monique is nominated for Barbershop 2, was it?
No, Rich knows.
Rich?
Well, you know, she was slighted for Soul Plane.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Okay,
this is a makeup award. This is the kind of thing that,
that LaRon
everyone
was talking
knows
about.
That if she wins, she'll be getting it for not being passed for Soul Plane. That's what the uproar will be, LaRon.
Yeah, it will be.
But the thing is, isn't any time anybody wins who had not won before, Christopher Plummer had not won for any number of roles that he's done over the years. He's nominated today, and if he wins tonight, yeah, it's in a way a makeup award, but even if he wins it today because people really like this performance, people are going to say, oh, well, he got it for The Sound of Music. You
right.
know, stupid people
but
like
you know, you know, take a movie like, I mean, the best year for an actor for actor nominations ever in the Oscars, I would submit, is 1982, 81 or 82, I have to think. 82. The nominees were Jack Lemmon in Missing, Peter O'Toole in My Favorite Year, Dustin Hoffman in Tootsie, and Paul Newman in The Verdict. Mm-hmm. And it went to Ben Kingsley in Gandhi, who no one had ever seen before. You know, 3 years later, 4 years later, Paul Newman wins for The Color of Money. His chief competition that year was Bob Hoskins for Mona Lisa. I don't think Mona Lisa has endured as a brilliant piece of filmmaking that really stands up. Not that The Color of Money has, but I certainly think that Paul Newman's career has. And to the extent that they were saying, look, we didn't give it to you a couple of years ago because, you know, frankly, Ben Kingsley was just that much better. But we have the entirety of your career on our minds and how this current performance sums that up for us. I don't think that's illegitimate.
The famous one for that also was John Wayne's Academy Award.
Right.
For, what was it, True Grit?
True Grit, 1969.
Yeah. Okay, Best Actress. Who's
Best
nominated?
Actress. Sandra Bullock for The Blind Side. Helen Mirren for The Last Station. Carrie Mulligan for An Education. Surprisingly good film for me. Gabourey Sidibe for Precious, based on a novel by Push by Sapphire. And, of course,
the worst title ever.
I know, it's so long. And, of course, the darling of gay men, anyway. Meryl Streep, Julie and Julia.
Okay, so why will Meryl Streep not win this year?
I think that might be the upset. I think she might win because of what we're just talking about. There's been so many performances in the past.
But she's won a
decade. Yeah, but it's been a long time since she's won Best Actress.
27 years.
Yeah.
Before Alex was born.
There you go.
But not before you were.
So she's been nominated.
Before I was born. Rich, who do you think is going to win tonight?
I think that Sandra Bullock probably has it.
Why?
In the bag. Well, she just has a lot going for her this year. You know, she's won already. before. Well, not for this role.
What did she win?
Globes.
Golden Globe.
She won the Golden Globe.
The SAG.
Yeah. So those are pretty good indicators.
And ESPY, I believe she won.
And Razzie. She won the Razzie.
Oh, this
night
is the great thing.
For All About Steve.
Yeah, she won the Razzie for Worst Actress last night, and she showed up to accept it.
Yeah.
That to me is reason enough that she should be given the Oscar today.
Actually, you know who the first? I think the first actress to show up to pick up a Razzie. It's not Sandra Bullock.
Halle Berry.
Explain the Razzies.
Razzies are given for the worst performances and the worst things of the year. And sometimes they're kind of jokey, but people do actually vote on them. And they've been given out for many, many years. And by jokey, I mean sometimes they have, like, worst screen couple, and it will be something like Mel Gibson and his own self-obsession, you know, or something like that. Best kiss, worst kiss they'll sometimes do, you know, or something like that. They give, like, the worst of the decade or worst of the millennium awards. I think Sylvester Stallone and Madonna are really high winners in the Razzies.
Yeah, but Sandra Bullock's worst performance
was for All About Steve, a different movie altogether.
Different movie.
I'll tell you, I think Sandra Bullock's going to win, and I think she deserves to win. And I think she deserves to win. Again, it's so difficult to weigh that. You could pick any one of these performances apart at one level. I remember when I saw – I wasn't really familiar with Carey Mulligan when I saw her in Education. I was like, wow, she's so self-possessed for a 16-year-old. She's 24. So, yeah, it's easy to be self-possessed as a 16-year-old when you're 8 years older than that. Helen Mirren is great, but if you wanted to, it's like, why are all these Russians speaking with British accents? I mean, you could just kind of concentrate on that.
Well, yeah, and plus it should be somebody who speaks English, not somebody from Great Britain.
Right. Meryl Streep, I loved her in Julie and Julia. She's been the front runner all year long, I think. But I think Sandra Bullock, first of all, she really got into the character. She does the opening narration for this movie, and I didn't even know it was her. I didn't recognize her voice. She just sounds different than Sandra Bullock. It's a tearjerker, but it's an incredibly effective tearjerker. And largely that's because of her. And I'll tell you, don't disregard this. Sandra Bullock is 45 years old. And she had a romantic leading role last year that made over $100 million. And with The Blind Side, she's become the first actress ever to lead a movie over $200 million. The movie has made $250 million. And it is called show business for a reason. Yeah. I mean,
and
at
the other
45, she is as powerful as any woman in Hollywood has ever
been. The other reason she should win, she lives in Austin. Laurent, you don't like her performance, didn't you?
The thing
and
is,
her husband's hot.
See?
There is that.
There is that.
I've always adored Sandra Bullock.
Who is she married to? I forgot.
Jesse James.
Right. Yeah. I've always adored Sandra Bullock. I just don't think it was the best performance of the year for me.
And you liked...
And I actually
like her. Was the best
her.
Performance of the year nominated for you?
Yeah, actually it was.
Gabori?
Yeah, I really was moved. And, you know, you were saying how Sandra Bullock's performance was a real tearjerker. Well, for me, it was Gabori Sidibe. I mean, you know, different things move different people.
And explain who she is, because not everybody
Again,
knows.
She is the star of Precious. She is Precious.
No, she's the star of Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire. And they are going to say that six times tonight. Actually, they will say it 7 times tonight. Because they'll say it
when
Monique
wins. So, I don't know. I was just impressed. I wouldn't be upset, though, if Meryl Streep won, because I thought she nailed it. But it's interesting, though, and Arnold and I talked about this, I think, the last year or two, about screen time. It's kind of the same situation here with Meryl Streep. When she was nominated for Best Actress in The Devil Wears Prada, that was actually a supporting role, but she got nominated for Best Actress. And when you look at screen time. Same thing with this. I was surprised. I can't think of the girl's name.
Amy Adams.
Amy Adams was actually the star.
I don't know. I mean,
would you say so?
No, I would not, because I think it's. I mean, I didn't use a stopwatch, but
it seemed like she was on there much more than.
It did seem that way to me, because there were long stretches of both sides. That's the thing, is they never appeared on screen together, so it's not like you could say, oh well, they had those great scenes together. Which Anne Hathaway and Meryl did have.
Right.
I would say it's about equal.
But I don't have a problem. I just thought I would see much more of Meryl going in to see it. But I don't have a problem with her nomination or if she won at all.
Yeah. But Sandra really did carry The Blind Side. I mean, it really is her movie.
I thought Sandra Bullock's in The Blind Side. And don't get me wrong, the movie was very enjoyable. I thought Sandra Bullock's performance in The Blind Side was something akin to something you see on Lifetime Channel.
for me.
I mean, when I saw the commercials before it came out, I thought this was like the new Lifetime movie.
Yeah, see, there you go. That was it.
But
for
it,
me.
it was not that to you. When you saw it.
Well, actually,
He's never seen it.
And I'm only going off of, you know, her track record this year. You know, I think, you know, it could be Tom Cruise syndrome where they thought he was going to win for Magnolia. And I guess they just decided not to give it to the biggest star because, you know, she'll
see,
have
I didn't think he was going to win for Magnolia. So,
I mean, I think
it's always a question of people have different handicaps, you know.
Yeah.
A good friend of mine is insisting that The Blind Side will win Best Picture. Because he thinks that, and I mean, actually, that's not a bad. We'll get into it.
We'll get to it. Okay,
but it's not a bad analysis, and we'll get into it.
Okay, well, why don't we go to Best Actor?
Best Actor. You want to read those?
Sure. The nominees are Jeff Bridges for Crazy Heart, the remake of Tender Mercies. George Clooney for Up in the Air, Morgan Freeman for Invictus, Colin Firth for A Single Man, and Jeremy Renner for The Hurt Locker.
Okay.
Let's start with you.
Interesting statistic that we were talking about earlier. Of all the categories, if you take the money that's been made by all the films, and you do an average, not counting like the animated,
the live action shorts and the documentaries and things like that.
The lowest grossing, average grossing category is costume design. The second lowest is actor, because none of these films are really gigantic hits.
Mm-hmm.
None made even $100 million.
Hmm. Okay.
Let's start with Rich this time. Who do you think should win and will win?
I think it's between Colin Firth and Jeff Bridges, but I think, you know, kind of like Sandra, Jeff has the buzz going behind him.
Got the momentum going. Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of goes back to, you know, his past career. I mean, he's come this far. And
what else has Colin Firth done?
Colin Firth is most famous for the BBC miniseries of a Pride and Prejudice, where he played Mr. Darcy.
Television, and they go out of their way to not reward TV stars.
But he's British, which is different.
Ah, you're right.
Because British people go back and forth between television and film easily. Helen Mirren, of course, before The Queen, best known for
Are You Being Served?
No. Prime Suspect TV series, several miniseries. I think Colin Firth, though, appeared in what are they called with Renee Zellweger? Bridget Jones movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He was the English Patient. He was the husband who basically. Mm-hmm.
So he's not a complete unknown here in America.
Oh, he's not an unknown at all.
At all.
No, the one that isn't really known is Renner.
Well, Jeremy Renner's biggest role, he's actually been in leading roles in movies that have grossed a grand total of about $300. He was Jeffrey Dahmer in Dahmer. He's an incredibly good actor.
And that's funny because I thought they missed that opportunity to nominate him that year for Dahmer.
Yeah.
I thought he was really good in
that. He was excellent in that. He's been excellent in a number of movies.
So he is a good actor.
Oh, yeah, he's
well
a good actor.
And deserves this nomination.
And Catherine Bigelow, the director of The Hurt Locker, for which he's nominated, said, you know, one of the things that she did, I mean, one of the things that people talked about is that there are three big stars in The Hurt Locker. Guy Pearce. Do you remember the other ones?
From Priscilla.
Pardon me?
From Priscilla.
From Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and L.A. Confidential.
There is another one, and I can't think
of
his name.
The other actors off the top of my head. And they all die, like, within the first 10 minutes of screen time that they have.
Oh, wait a minute. Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes is in it. Yeah. I was surprised to see him.
Yeah.
He's not in it that long, because, you know, he gets killed.
But that's the thing is she said, you know, I'm casting a lot of lesser-known actors, because you see the big actors, and you assume that they're going to be the stars, and then suddenly you're blindsided by the fact that they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeremy Renner, so since you don't know how big of a star he is, you have no idea how long he's going to live. And considering that he's in a bomb disposal unit, it seems least likely that he could die any minute.
Yeah.
And it adds a kind of an excitement to the movie.
And you just ruined the movie for us?
No, I didn't
ruin the movie. No, actually you didn't, because you don't know if he died or not.
Yeah.
I do, but anyway, so who do you think will...
I think Jeff Bridges definitely deserves to win. You know, when I heard that Jeff Bridges was going to was his Oscar performance, he was going to get it, my first reaction was exactly what yours is, that they're going to give it to Jeff Bridges because, oh, well, we've never given it to him before, and he's been around Hollywood forever, and it's just kind of like a career achievement award.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that when the award doesn't deserve it. I mean, I think it's interesting.
Okay.
I think it's interesting when you look back on people who have won Oscars that, like, finally won Oscars, and they have not been nominated since. Al Pacino in Scent of a Woman, Julia Roberts in Erin Brockovich. These are people who, once they finally won their award, they said, good, now shut up. We don't want to put you on the list anymore. We really don't like you that much, but now you have your award. Now go away. I think, speaking of which, I think Sandra Bullock's award could be considered like the Erin Brockovich award, but I think it's so much more deserved than Julia Roberts's was. But I think with Jeff Bridges, I've always said the interesting thing about Jeff Bridges is movie actors are often just broken down into one of two categories, either movie stars or genuine actors. And I think Jeff Bridges has always been kind of the movie star mode, but he's just the least charismatic and most uninteresting movie star ever. And I think that he's really good in this. I think he actually gives a character performance. And it's not my favorite. I would vote for Colin Firth in a heartbeat, but I don't think it's a bad performance. I think it's a very good performance. I think it's the best acting Jeff Bridges has done.
I don't have any diehard favorites of anyone in this category. The only film I haven't seen is Crazy Heart in this category. I've seen the rest. But I do have a problem with one of the nominees, big time, and that's George Clooney. Why did he even get nominated? I think that was a waste of a slot.
To piss you off.
And it did, because I'm like, somebody else could have given could have gotten
so who was your nomination?
It achieved its purpose.
I thought, you know,
what
even though I thought
nominations, Laurent, for actor and actress that got overlooked? I know Emily Blunt, you think, for the young...
And that was it. I thought they could have totally put Emily Blunt in Sandra Bullock's spot. I'm not saying Emily Blunt should have won, but just for the nomination. But best actor...
Emily Blunt was in?
The Young Victoria. And I thought George Clooney's spot could have gone to Michael Stuhlbarg in A Serious Man.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Thank you.
I hated that movie.
The movie.
Hated it.
It's a really, really weird movie.
Okay,
but
now what is this movie?
Oh, God. Do you want to explain what it's about?
It's about 2 hours of nonstop idiocy.
Okay, so it's the Coen brothers who made the two Marfa movies.
No Country for Old Men, Burn After Reading.
But cool, Rich agrees with me. Okay. So there you go. I just thought, again, I'm not saying Michael should have won, but as far as the nomination, I just thought George Clooney's spot was wasted. I mean, if you've seen this, then you've seen most of his other performances.
And everybody loves George Clooney.
Yeah.
And
they do.
And he
they
does
do.
Good work. I mean,
and he's a good guy, and I'm not saying that he's – I'm not even saying his performance was bad. I'm not saying that at all. I just don't think it was Oscar worthy.
Do you know the old joke, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, but something like do you know what a camel – the definition of a camel is? It's an elephant built by consensus. You know, or maybe it's the other way around. An elephant is a camel built by consensus. That you just kind of change things around. I think one of the funny things about this is, you know, it is the Academy. We call it the Oscars, but it's actually an award given by an Academy of 5,700 members.
Yeah.
And they nominate their own. And, you know, given the choice between giving this radio show the best radio show in the country award or the exact show in Minneapolis the award, I would give this one because, hey, these are the people that I know and it serves me.
I was sure he was going to say Minneapolis.
Now I will. I will be voting for Minneapolis from now on. But I think that there's, you know, you kind of vote for your own. People are personally popular.
Right.
They serve the Academy. They represent what the Academy wants in a film. You know, an interesting thing is that for years the first 3 years of the Oscars, 2-3 years of the Oscars, they gave a character the best, what we call now called Best Picture, was called Best Production. Mm-hmm. And it was felt that that definition favored big budget splashier action films. And so they changed it to Best Picture so it didn't seem that way. And of course, the second they do that, All Quiet on the Western Front wins, followed by, you know, a portmanteau movie like the Grand Hotel. And, you know, they reward the big budgets because they're making these. That's what Hollywood does.
Okay, so let's move on. We need to take
a
break in just a minute.
We'll come back and get to the big one.
Well, let's do why don't you read what the director awards are, and then we'll take our break and we'll come back.
Oh, I don't have them ready.
I got them right here.
Go ahead.
A Catherine Bigelow for The Hurt Locker, James Cameron for Avatar, Lee Daniels for Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire, Jason Reitman, I Must Have Reitman, for Up in the Air, and Quentin Tarantino for Inglorious Bastards.
Okay, why don't we take our break? You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. However, that pledge only counts if you pay it. To make your voice count here at The Voice of the People, send your pledge to KNON 710909, Dallas, Texas, 7-5-3-7-1. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by pledging on the web, knon.org. Your vote for your favorite radio program on KNON is your pledge. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. Don't lose what you want on 89.3 FM. Send your pledge today. KNON Box 710909, Dallas, Texas 75371. Be sure to put the name of the show you're supporting on your check, money order, or the envelope. Questions about KNON Pledge Drive, call 214-828-9500, extension 234.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
It's time for
those darn heterosexuals. A Pensacola man sued Hanes for defective underwear. The fly, he claimed, failed to close, allowing his penis to rub against his bathing suit, and the sand in the bathing suit irritated the skin and ruined his vacation. Of course, he couldn't do anything about it because he said he couldn't see his penis over his fat stomach and wouldn't consider asking his wife to inspect. The suit was dismissed. Our question? Heterosexuals wear underwear under their bathing suits?
When you say the suit was dismissed, do you mean the lawsuit or the bathing suit?
The lawsuit was dismissed. The bathing suit should have been.
Okay. Certainly, I would have burned it along with all the fleas. But heterosexual story number two. We love when police out there are protecting the public. Heterosexual Asheville, North Carolina cop Charles Diaz became angry when he saw a bicyclist carrying his three-year-old son on the bike unsafely. So what did he do? He pulled his gun and shot the man. The bullet grazed the biker's helmet, and the cop is now charged with attempted murder. No word on how the three-year-old fared when his father got hit in the head and lost control of the bicycle.
I hope he landed on the grass, at least. All right, and so the fashion police helped convict two heterosexuals in Elkins, West Virginia, which I figure that's all that lives there. This pair was on parole and prohibited from possessing firearms. They showed up for a parole appointment wearing orange vests, alerting the officer that they had just come in from a day of hunting and firing guns. So they probably also had their Sarah Palin book with them.
Researchers at Wake Forest University have solved a question that has confounded heterosexuals for centuries. What happens when a rabbit needs a new penis? Using only a few
extractions.
What does? I think I know here.
My dissertation on that.
Only using a few extracted cells sprayed onto a chemical frame, the scientist had successfully grown the new organ. All 12 of the rabbits fitted with the new lab-grown penises began mating with females within a minute of meeting them, and 4 successfully impregnated them.
Maybe that's what you need to do, is you need to get people straight, you need to give them homegrown penises, and we could eradicate homosexuality, because mine kind of has a mind of its own.
Yeah.
And
yeah, well, we want one that...
It doesn't seek out the vajayjay.
And you thought curling was stupid. Afghanistan's national game is buzkashi. A team of 12 men on horseback try to carry a goat carcass across the length of a field, around a goal and back, through an opposing team defense that includes almost any tactic short of murder. Spectators are often...
I've seen this game.
Yeah, yeah. You're about to see more of it, because spectators are often trampled by riders, disregarding boundaries, and the game is often a little bit more than violent anarchy. The head of the Buzkashi Federation said he plans to present the game for consideration to the International Olympic Committee. And that's this week's...
Those darn heterosexuals.
Okay, we're talking Academy Awards. We are up to...
Best director.
Speaking of darn heterosexuals.
We only have 15 minutes.
Well, actually, there's one gay one.
We have 5 directors. We have 10 films. We have 15 minutes.
Let's get to it.
Best director.
Okay. Best director. We already listed them. Who do you think should win?
I think Should and Will be Catherine Bigelow for The Hurt Locker. I think it's historic for a number of reasons. If she wins, she'll become the first woman to have won the Oscar.
True.
Has a woman ever been nominated?
4 women have been nominated. The first in 1976, Lena Wertmüller for the Italian film Seven Beauties. Then Jane Campion for The Piano and Sofia Coppola for Lost in Translation. And those are the only women who've ever been nominated. And I think I'm not a gigantic fan of Kathryn Bigelow in general, but I think that she did a good job. I think that the funniest thing is that, and why she'll win, is because she is a woman, and this is the ass-kickingest war movie.
It is.
You know, it is. It's a testosterone fest. It is a straight guy movie directed by a, you know, lipstick wearing woman, and I think that people will respond to that. She really has the skills to do that. I mean, I think it, she. I think she's.
It wasn't a chick flick.
It wasn't a chick flick.
Not a chick flick by far. Yeah. I agree. I totally agree with you. We agree on something, Arnold. I agree with that one. But I wouldn't be upset if also another historic win would be made. It would be Lee Daniels. He's only the second African American to be even nominated for Best Director. The first was John Singleton.
1991, yeah.
Yeah, for Boys in the Hood. And
Barack Obama, of course, won the Oscar. Oh, no, that was Al Gore. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, so Lee Daniels, the director of, Precious, I'm not going to go through the whole thing, who also make history because he, I don't know if he's the first, but he...
Well, he's the first kind
gay.
Of like openly gay guy. If he won, he would be the first openly gay director to win. Mm-hmm. And by like our standards of openly gay, certainly George Cukor has won the past, mm-hmm. but that was kind of in the days before they kind of discussed
okay,
that.
Okay, so you just brought something up: gay show, gay Oscars, you know, or gay.
Very little gay content.
Little gay content, and this is about it for this year's
shows. It's very close to it. There's some gay.
Well, of course, the Best Actor nomination. That's an openly gay character.
Yeah, Colin Firth plays a gay man and a single man,
but that's
about
it.
Only nomination for that movie. There aren't any other openly gay people that I know of that have been nominated for anything. I mean, obviously, there are certainly gay film editors and so on and so forth, but like Scott Rudin isn't nominated.
Could you come back next week and let me know which ones those are?
I will let you know.
I also would not be upset if Quentin Tarantino won. I am a fan of Quentin Tarantino.
Would you be upset if James Cameron won?
No.
I wouldn't either.
No, because, you know, I know he has an advantage because of, you know, I mean, dear God, it's, I think, the largest grossing film in history now.
Yes.
Avatar.
By a long shot.
By a long shot. At the same time, it did.
And the one that it defeated, the second highest grossing film,
is also his film.
Which is second highest grossing over the third, again, by a long shot.
Exactly. So, no, I wouldn't. Avatar brought certain things that definitely made it the best picture of the year. And
which gets us into the best picture of the
year. Yeah. Okay, now this year, first of all, explain, what is this nonsense with 10 films?
The reason for it was last year, the Best Pictures nomination list did not include The Dark Knight. And everyone thought that would be it was a big hit, and they thought it would be nominated. It got nominated for eight Oscars, I believe it was. I don't think it deserved Best Picture Director, especially in light of what was nominated.
I didn't either.
And so I wasn't that upset. But what the Academy did is they said, we're going to up the nominations to 10. This is not unprecedented.
But it used to be 10.
They did it in the 40s. Actually, the year of Casablanca was one of 10 nominees. And the late 30s they did it too. And they didn't used to have very fixed rules too as a total number of nominations. And so they said the whole idea behind this is it, first of all, it will increase television audiences because the audiences for the Oscars have been going down over the years. And I think that they felt that if they get some popular films nominated, because what would happen is a lot of things that no one thinks are going to get nominated. I mean, in the real world, no one would have put A Serious Man or The Blind Side in a Best Picture nominee. No one thinks that those were in the top five. But suddenly it becomes, hey, those could win, because now rather than having to get basically any picture that used to get 25% of the vote would win because it would have enough percentage that it would beat out all the other ones. Now you basically need 12% of the vote and you could possibly win this thing.
Did we go down the nominees for Best Picture?
No. Why don't you read them?
Avatar, The Blind Side, District 9, An Education, The Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, Precious, A Serious Man, Up, and Up in the Air.
Yeah. Okay, now, before we go any further, what's this nonsense with the Precious name?
It's based off of a book.
Right, but that's a ridiculous reason.
It's
not called Up in the Air based on the book
exactly,
Up in the Air.
Exactly.
By,
I don't know.
The only example I can think of that's similar to that on Broadway, The Color Purple was doing terribly. It was about to close before it opened.
They changed the name to Oprah Winfrey Presents
The Color Purple, and all of a sudden, big hit.
Yeah. Right. No, I think it's ridiculous that they do that. And
I don't know
reasons was they changed the name to Precious from Push, and so I think that they felt, oh, this is the way that we can kind of brand it. Also, it was an independent
film. Wait. So they named it Precious after a book nobody's heard of.
Well, apparently people have heard of the book.
No, yeah, it actually kind of was a popular book.
And I think that was the deal. Yeah. I think it's stupid, but that's the way it works.
So name it after the book. What is this Precious thing? You call it by the book name if you think it has value.
But of those nominations, I mean, they had the desired effect in this sense. District 9, sci-fi film. An education.
Oh, I got on my own trivia, but go ahead.
An Education is the small British film. A Serious Man is a small American film. Up is an animated film. Precious, low budget film. You know, Avatar, The Blind Side, the mainstream, populist film. So I think that the whole idea was that
they really mixed it up.
We'd mix it up, that it wouldn't be one thing. What I find interesting is how many are war movies. Avatar, The Blind Side, The Hurt Locker. To an extent, District 9 is a war movie. In the other categories, Inglourious Basterds is also a war movie. The White Ribbon is kind of a metaphor for World War II and set on the eve of World War I.
We skipped over you for Best Director, so Rich, talk to us about what do you think Best Picture?
Oh, yeah, I'm on board with Catherine Bigelow. I think this is her year. I would love Quentin Tarantino to win, but I don't think he'll take it home this year.
Yeah. Do you think now, when she wins, are people going to say just like, oh, so-and-so won for their body of work? Oh, she won because they wanted a woman.
I'm sure somebody will say that, whether it's true or not, who knows?
This is a perfect example of what I was talking about earlier about like Christopher Plummer, is that it's hard not to watch The Hurt Locker and say, wow, this is a woman directed this. This is kind of goes beyond sex, goes beyond race, goes beyond, you know, sexual orientation.
Right, and had a man, if you found out that a man had directed it, would you have the same response?
Right. And I think that that's a relevant inquiry, and I don't think you can say, no. The question is, how well was it directed? It's like, well, no. I mean, we don't live in vacuums. We actually live in the real world, and we kind of relate to things.
I mean,
Michael Jackson.
I love when boundaries or barriers have been broken. It's time for it to be broken. So, yeah.
So you think I should get out of my vacuum?
You should. You should.
Okay, so for Best Picture, then.
I say Inglourious Basterds.
Okay, Rich. What,
do you say Inglourious Basterds will win, or you?
That's who I will want to win. Who will win? Who knows? I think Avatar is expected, but also The Hurt Locker is getting a lot of momentum here lately. Yeah.
Rich,
I think The Hurt Locker is probably going to win. I'd like Inglourious Basterds. I think Precious might sneak in.
Precious based on a book.
This is an interesting category for me because I think it is the most competitive category in some ways of the major categories. Because honestly, we've been talking about these other things, but except for Christopher Plummer, I think it's pretty much a lock with the four people that are going to win the acting awards. And I'm pretty think Catherine Bigelow is pretty much a lock too. There's always a surprise. Every year there's a surprise.
Every year there's a surprise.
So I'm picking Christopher Plummer to be the surprise. But the bigger surprise would be if it was, Stanley Tucci. You know, that would be the big surprise.
Or a bigger surprise would be if Up in the Air won for Best Picture.
Right. But
I would faint.
I mean, actually, of the movies on this list, the one that was highest up on my ranking of Best Pictures of the Year, Up. But I don't.
Do you know? I was going to say that's the one I want.
It is. It's a really good animated film.
But it's going to win the animated feature category, I think, also. And I don't know that they're going to give it to.
Deserves it
for this, and it deserves it.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful movie. I think it also deserves the writing award over Inglourious Basterds, and The Hurt Locker.
Okay, but you think?
I think Avatar will win, and I think it'll win because this is where it gets down to a really hard call, because of these 10 nominations that throw everything up in the air. But I think that there are two camps in Hollywood, and there are the Jeffrey Katzenbergs and the Howard Stringers and even the Martin Scorseses, and they say, hey, this is changing the way movies are going to be made. Katzenberg has already announced that every subsequent release from his studio will be in 3D.
Yeah, that'll last for the next 6 months.
Well, I don't think so. There were 16 films released in 3D last year. They represented 10% of the box office. Of all films released.
Until they make one that costs $300 million and they lose their shirt.
Well, they may, but they do that. They're doing that anyway, and they didn't lose their shirts on Avatar. But I think what happened is, I think that a lot of the kind of business-oriented, kind of like real production, the show business people, are going to vote for Avatar because they see it as transforming the way that movies are made. And I think a lot of the touchy-feely chick flick, what it's all about the story and all about the acting people. Sean Penn is going to be voting for the Hurt Locker, and and Jeffrey Katzenberg is going to be going for Avatar. And the question is, how many of the kind of it's all about the story are going to be it's all about the movie
and
making?
Is this one of those that in 50 years we'll look back and say, if Up wins, that's like How Green Was My Valley as opposed to Citizen Kane, or if Avatar wins, will people look back and say it won because that advanced filmmaking?
I think Titanic won because people saw it that way too, as advancing filmmaking. And I think you look at Titanic now and it feels bloated and the special effects kind of cheesy. But at the time, that's how you can't predict how it's going to go.
It's at the time.
And we were talking before you got here, Laurent and I were talking, and the reason that I disliked that film is I sat through the entire thing going, okay, when does Celine Dion start singing? Oh my God, she's going to start singing soon.
And she never did.
And she never did. until the closing credits.
I will say, excuse me, I was really, really pleasantly surprised with one of the nominations in the Best Film category, Best Picture category, and that was District 9. I was so pleasantly surprised. It's not going to win. But first of all, I was surprised I even liked the movie. It's a foreign film. It's a foreign sci-fi film. And usually Hollywood kind of has, you know, the monopoly on those films. And I thought District 9, in a lot of ways, was just as good as Avatar.
I bet you if you had asked Peter Jackson a year ago, told him he would be nominated for an Oscar for Best Picture next year, which movie did he think it would be for? He would have said The Lovely Bones and wouldn't have mentioned District 9, which just goes to show you how things change.
But there's something playing against Avatar winning. No science fiction film has ever won Best Picture. There's been a couple of nominated. Star Wars nominated in 1977, and it lost to Woody Allen's Annie Hall. Mm-hmm. And E.T., I didn't even know E.T. was nominated. Mm-hmm. And it lost to Gandhi.
Hmm.
So, I don't know, some history might be made tonight, some things might be changed.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, certainly I think we've gotten to the point where sci-fi is legitimate.
Absolutely.
And mainstream.
It wasn't. But my friend's basis for saying The Blind Side would win, which I think is interesting, and I think he has a good point, is that because there are so many people, because Katzenberg's going to be voting for Avatar and Penn is going to be voting for The Hurt Locker, there aren't three other pictures to distract them from. There are eight other pictures to distract them from. So all it takes someone is to say, Hurt Locker, Avatar, I'm so tired of all the things. You know what? I'm going to vote for the movie I like the best. And that was The Blind Side. And most people saw The Blind Side because it made a third of what Avatar made. I mean, and it cost a quarter of whatever, or it cost a 20th of what Avatar made, or cost to make. And they might just say, hey, I'm just going to vote. I'm not going to get into that Avatar Hurt Locker debate. I'm just
certainly
gonna vote
Avatar will win all the technical awards.
Absolutely,
it should.
It should. It'll win seven awards. It'll maybe six tonight, and then
we'll see
whether it wins. It might not win score, and it might not win.
No, it didn't. It was not included in any of the acting awards.
Not a single one.
Do you think it should have been?
No.
Why?
Who stood out that deserved it?
I don't think there was a single
Sigourney Weaver
that stood out. You could have given Sigourney Weaver a supporting actress just because people know who she is.
Do you know what I did like about the film? While you were watching it, you really couldn't tell where the acting stopped and the animation began.
The answer is it didn't, because that's performance capture. I mean, they highlighted the performances. They didn't copy over them.
But they were still manipulated or whatever they did with it. And you couldn't tell where that happened.
Yeah. Oh, here's something you've been interested in. I forgot that the lead guy in Avatar, I've got the character's name.
Sully.
But the guy who plays Sully, you know who that role was offered to?
No.
Matt Damon.
Ah.
He turned it down.
And we're out of time. Rich Lopez.
Thanks, Arnold. Rich.
Thank you.
Thanks, Arnold.
Arnold Wayne Jones. Thank you for being here, and come back next time we have an award show. Which is the next one? Emmys?
Tony's next.
Okay. We'll talk to you then. We're going out with music from?
Diane Birch.